John Coltrane's A Love Supreme. The four-note chorus, love supreme, a love supreme, a love supreme, a love supreme, washes over us repeatedly like breakers at the seashore, while Coltrane's tenor sax rides the waves in solo after solo. For Coltrane, this album was the culmination of his spiritual journey after having fought drug abuse with near death from an overdose in 1957 and many crazy, crazy, erratic relationships. There is even an African Orthodox Coltrane Church in San Francisco. I've been there, it's great. Where each Sunday morning, musicians from all over the world jam to A Love Supreme. Coltrane was a universalist in the sense that he believed that all religions led to wisdom and salvation. In particular, he believed that his music could echo the underlying vibrations that governed the universe. The sequence of notes and the words, A Love Supreme, resemble a mantra into which we can sink in deep meditation. The album itself was recorded in 1964, but have we in any way since then moved beyond Coltrane's mystical insight? 50 years later, in 2012, we Americans remain some unhappy campers. Most notably, we are despondent over our dismal economic situation and dismayed over the striking income disparity between the rich and the middle class. Our individual striving for economic security, for personal recognition, and for achieving the American dream has blinded us to seeing alternative and more soulful ways of being in the world. This narrowness of vision sometimes leads to existential despair. Recently, we've learned that there's been a skyrocketing increase in suicides in the last decade, up by over 15%. So high that suicide has replaced motor vehicle accidents as the leading cause of injury death. Despite the fact that we have more psychiatric drugs and better awareness and diagnosis of mental illness, preventing suicide remains elusive. Friends or neighbors or family members who have signed off on life have touched us all. We may know the sense of emptiness and the lack of meaning that those on the edge experience daily. But no one yet quite understands this meteoric rise in hopelessness. Can religion or spiritual life offer partial answers? Well, demographers tell us that the number of those who are unaffiliated with any religion has risen sharply over the past 5 years, particularly among the under 30 millennial generation. Those eschewing religion often tout a lack of need for belonging to a community of people with shared values. Such social isolation could lead to an increased risk of suicide. But even those immersed in a religious community can still feel isolated and anchorless, particularly if their values are in conflict with those of that community at large. Today, I will talk about three historical paths potentially leading us out of this self-perpetuating frenzy of disillusionment: a return to the self, a return to the community, and a return to the sacred a la Coltrane. In modernist America, we're most familiar with the return to the self. Psychiatrists and therapists such as Carl Jung have based their techniques on finding the inner and true self underneath our surface egos. But the process of finding the self has a long history, probably most recently starting from Emerson in the Unitarian tradition, and dates back all the way to the ancient Greeks, whose saying, "Know thyself," was inscribed on the temple of Apollo at Delphi a couple of millennia ago. The Egyptian-Roman philosopher Plotinus, whose Platonic philosophy inspired not only early Christian, Judaic, and Islamic theologians, but also many pagan offshoots, exhorted us to, quote, "withdraw into yourself and look. And if you do not find yourself beautiful yet, act as does the creator of a statue that is to be made beautiful. He cuts away here, he smooths there, makes this line lighter, this one purer, until a lovely face has grown upon his work." I must confess that this is the model for self-realization that I propounded for most of my adult professional life as a shrink. Realizing its limitations propelled me to seminary. The problem with searching for the self, as we you use may see it, is that the self is always in relation to the other, to others in our communities, to others in the world. We cannot define ourselves according to self-reliant individualism. We are interconnected. What about returning to the community? Donald Miller's best-selling novel, Blue Like Jazz, is a winding and sinuous coming-of-age story that traces Donald's spiritual journey. It was also adapted into a must-see indie film that'll move you to tears. Donald was raised as a Southern Baptist in a conservative, predominantly Republican town in rural Texas. And he eventually evolved into a liberal Christian author of works on Christian spirituality. Donald structures his book like a postmodern story in which each chapter explores an aspect of Christian theology, such as grace, love, or community, and nuances Donald's complex and varied progression of psychological identity. Donald entitled the novel Blue Like Jazz on account of the fact that both God and jazz music structurally don't resolve for him, unlike other forms of music, such as the country music he heard as a kid back in Texas. Moreover, as he comes to realize it, his spirituality and his notions of God do not make for a tidy story in contrast to the evangelical Christian narrative with its triad of sin, personal conversion, and salvation that formed him in youth. Donald describes initially hating jazz until he saw a sax player totally absorbed in his performance on a street in Portland. He then began to adore this music and started to value its incompleteness. In his novel, Donald presents us with a series of episodes of how he matured in his views of God. When he was a kid, he saw God as the great elderly father, not so different from his own biological father, whom he dreaded. Later, he imagined God as an impersonal slot machine that would reward or punish, you know, his behavior and keep an account, running account of his moral winnings and losses. Both these ideas about God were individual. He, like most members of his community, viewed religion from a very personal and isolated vantage point. God is watching you. Donald talked about his lack of community, a community as an ingathering of open-minded and loving people. He distinguished his original Southern Baptist and morally rigid Christian community from other communities with which he engaged, such as Reed College in Portland. At one point in his journey, he began to attend a Unitarian church in Colorado. Yay, Unitarians. He states, All Souls Unitarian Church in Colorado Springs was wonderful. The people were wonderful. Like my friends in the woods, they freely and openly accepted everybody the church didn't seem to accept. I don't suppose they accepted fundamentalists, but neither did I at the time. I was comfortable there. Everybody was comfortable there. I did not like their flaky theology, though. I did not like the way they changed words in the hymns, and I did not like the fact that they ignored the Bible. But I loved them, and they really liked me. I loved the smiley faces, the hugs, and the vulnerable feel to the place. Donald's experience at All Souls UU Church reassures us and congregational membership and hospitality committees that we are doing our job and that Unitarian Universalism has a broad appeal to seekers, leaving the strictures of more orthodox and fundamentalist religions. But Donald himself dissociates the beloved community, which he found in the Colorado UU Church, from his lingering belief in a one true theology. Maybe that's why he still is a little bit ambivalent about jazz and its lack of resolution. And now we turn and return to the sacred. The poem from Mirabai that Colleen read calls forth in words what Coltrane evokes in A Love Supreme. Mirabai lived in North India about 500 years ago. After the death of her husband, to whom she had been obligated to marry, and at the end of that unhappy marriage, she announced that she was wedded to Krishna, the Hindu god. Now, Krishna, according to Hindu legend, descended to the world to manifest himself as a flute-playing cowherd with whom many maidens fell in love, kind of like the flute-playing shepherd that Darcy read in the children's story. Mirabai devotes herself to Krishna. She recognizes him in every living creature. Her ecstatic love for Krishna tumbles her through an array of emotions, love, despair, sense of forlornness, and a nurturing connection to the god. You can hear it ring out. Oh, friend, I sit alone while the world sleeps. And her pleading, lifter of mountains, return. These words are like solos for her, sitting atop the undercurrent of love that pervades the universe. Coltrane's supreme love and Mirabai's openness to universal love both offer us a door to the sacred community through which we can quell our individualistic concerns. But it ain't easy. In the complexity of life, the sacred does return. And at the same time, the sacred feels like it abandons us. It is a cycle embedded in our very humanness. There is no love without separation, no joy without sorrow. Both Coltrane and Mirabai left the turbulent world of their youth to seek a turbulent life with the sacred. We can do likewise. Amen, and blessed be.